device that he has. He has a ruler with him. Now, this ruler, just like any other metal, expands when it gets hotter. So, right about here, when it's cool, his ruler may be that length. But if he goes over here, his ruler will expand. Well, so will Albert, but his ruler will expand. That's the only rule I'm giving you. Okay? So as you move from the cold into the warmer zone on my hot plate, my ruler is expanding. All Albert has to do, because Albert's like the scientist of this hot plate world, his university has asked them to somehow produce and draw what the shortest line between, let's say, two points, A and B, is going to look like. What would the shortest line from Albert look like? Okay. What if Albert had to draw a triangle, A, B, C, what the angles of this triangle look like? If Albert had to draw a square, what would the square look like? Remember, what is a square? Think about this. You draw a square by going a fixed distance, turn 90 degrees, go a fixed distance, same distance, turn 90 degrees, same distance, turn 90 degrees, and you should end up where you started. Uh-oh. And then I would like Albert to draw a circle and compare the circumference. Now remember, when you draw a circle, circle is something that's a fixed radial difference. Remember, R, and you go right around. Think about this when you have to do it, because his ruler for drawing a fixed difference, depending where he is going to shrink and grow. So how would he calculate his circumference? So that's something for you to play with during the next couple of days. Talk about it, draw some ideas of some playing with it, just to see what the geometry of Albert Einstein's world looks like. That's the fun stuff, because I'll use this with our general relativity.
Thank you very much for that, Michael.
You're going to pause my cow.
That was good, because I don't think we've given him enough problems in physics to do it.
No, no, I know. But I'm not even doing that. He's been sleeping all the time.
What we're going to do now is we're going to get... What we're going to do now is go back to the interferometer. So we heard the talk about quantum computers this morning, from Ray, just how powerful they are, in theory at least, and how they use the idea of interference at quantum level. And in a way, this interferometer we're looking at can actually think of that as a very, very incredibly simple quantum computer. And you'll see more similar experiments. So at the Institute of Quantum Computing on Monday. And you can think of this as a light quantum computer. So Ray talked about one with the spins of nuclei. And you can think of this as a light, because Henry talked about the zeros and ones, the bits. And all you need to do to get a quantum computer is just have any, really anything that has a 0 and 1. It could be electronics, sort of 0 and 1, it could be 5 volts and 0 volts, or spin up and spin down. And so just to tie in with his talk, we have two possible paths of the particle to take, the photon to take, and the interferometer. And you can basically assign one, the one that we call 1, 0. We can say, well, let that be a 1 for our bit. And the other one is 0, 1. Let that be a 0. And we have a bit, a binary digit. So going down one path, 1, another path, 0. And so Ray talked about the idea of superposition, a particle being in two, taking both paths at once in the double slit experiment. So we know we can get the same thing in this experiment, so that's superposition. So this is a simple example of a quantum computer. Yes?
Just quickly a question about that. It does take both paths. Doesn't it mathematically also take neither one and the other?
Sorry, I don't understand. Neither?
Does it also, like, you're saying it takes both paths at the same time?
Sure, that's, yeah.
Yeah, doesn't it also take neither of the paths, one of the paths, and the other path?
So what do you mean? Do you mean does it not take definitely one path or definitely the other? Yeah, you can unambiguously say that from, the mathematics of a state of the particle definitely taking one path is that, and definitely take the other is that, and it's not in that state. So it's definitely not that. So yes, you can say that. That's what you meant. Great. Just one announcement. So I saw there were some people, I saw a number of people taking photos during the keynote presentation. So feel free to take photos during around the building, but so if you could refrain from taking during the keynote presentation, that would really be appreciated. It's a little bit distracting for people, and also really should ask permission if you're going to take a photo like that. So if you could just please refrain from taking photos, it's a little bit distracting. So thank you for that. Okay, so we looked at this interferometer, so let's just do a little review. And okay, so really what we have, so we just have one photon, an individual particle of light. And what it does is, this is a half-silvered mirror. So what it's like is a leaky mirror, if you like. So if we have one photon, then with 50% probability, it gets transmitted through here, and 50% probability reflected. So they're the two possibilities. And again, if we have 1,000 photons, a million photons, say, we'll find 500,000 of them here, and 500,000 will measure to be detected at this transmission detector here. So, but the strange thing is, if we have this setup, we might expect to have 50% of the photons here and see 50% there. Because after all, it's kind of, they can equally go this way or that way, and it seems they can equally go that way or that way. But we saw in the experiment, you actually find, so 0% of the photons there and 100% of them there. And what's happening is some kind of strange quantum phenomenon. And it's quantum interference, like the interference you get in the double slit experiment. So what's happening is that really we saw again yesterday there are two possible paths and they're out of sync with each other, out of phase. So that's destructive interference. So we get zero probability there. And the two possible ways photons can get to here, they're in sync with each other. So we get the reinforcement, constructive interference, and 100% probability. So this is a counterintuitive thing. But we can do the math. So that's just descriptive at this stage. And we saw the mathematics. So representing using matrices, just which path the photons take. And we can do that. And then, so really, this is a state where the photon is in anywhere. This just means it's a mathematical way of representing the photon being anywhere along that path there, somewhere along that path. And this one here is a photon being somewhere along that part there. So that's what it means. That's representing, in some sense, where the photon is. Okay. And so we can have states or states of affairs, which mathematically representing what the photon is doing is states like this, where we don't have one or zero. And that's a mathematical way of representing the photon taking both paths, because it's not definitely a one and a zero, or a zero and a one. It's kind of a bit of both, if you like. And we have these strange factors of root two, and we saw why we have those, because to find out what we actually measure in the experiment, we measure for 50-50%, at least going after one half-silvered mirror. And so to get that, we need to take the magnitude, we need to put the magnitude signs around each of the two elements, and then square those. And when we do that, what we get is, in both cases, square of one over root two is a half. And that gives us a probability. So this is the mathematical way that, yes, John?
You know your results by experimentation. So do you create those matrices from the results, so then you can do the math?
Well, you could do it that way. So you could do it that way, or what you could do is, so in a sense, what you could do is just make sure, set up the initial conditions of the experiment, so prepare the experiment so you know exactly how the photons come out, okay. And then just use the rules of quantum mechanics to predict what the results will be, and then you don't need to know the results. So, yep. So, this is what we have, and this is the probability rule for finding out probability of which path the photon will take, path one or path two. And so I guess, just to get the notation, so I guess that's, okay, that's path one there, and that's path two. So, okay, so we did this little activity, and we had some fun yesterday, and just confirming that everything worked out. So, okay, yep, and we did that. So, and then what we've got to do is, okay, we've got the state of the photon, but it goes through a half-silvered mirror. So what happens to it then? We've got to kind of, it evolves, it changes, so we need to update it. And we saw that what we do is we actually, what updates the state is we want something to take one 2x1 matrix into another 2x2 2x1 matrix. And what does that is a 2x2 matrix, and in particular this one here. So really what you should associate that with is this half-silvered mirror here and that one there. So not with the mirror, because they're different things. They're really not doing anything. Yes?
Is there any particular reason why we use like the one I and then I1, or is it just like it was, that's what works?
Well, there definitely are some reasons. There are some technical reasons why. But I guess for the moment, that's what works. So we want kind of see that we want something like that. So yesterday we saw, so we know that what we want is a matrix that does this transformation. That we start with the photon definitely being in one path, and it ends up being in this path here. So basically and they give us a 50-50% probability. So we want a matrix that does that. So that really narrows down the possibilities and the limits. And it turns out if you actually do the math, then at least for that gives you the first column of the matrix. So I'll leave that up. You probably all solved that by now, so I can turn that off. So, okay. So what we can do is kind of test out this. So it's not a proof. This is really just basically what you said, just seeing that it works. So we have one. Oh. And so we did this yesterday. So what we do is sort of one. 1 multiplied by 1 gives us 1, I by 0 gives us 0, and we have the root 2 out front, I by 1, 1 by 0 gives us I, and then the root 2, but that's what we're looking for, so that actually works out. So at least for this element, this matrix, so basically it works. And so that's probably the best way of thinking about it. We're looking for something that does this to this, and it turns out this matrix works, and you can figure it out. I think we did it before for the other element, for this one. So there are kind of more technical reasons, but we don't need to go into those. Yes?
Okay. So you have the
vector matrix, the one column,
yep,
with 0 and 1. So which path is represented by 1, which path is represented by 0? Can you pick that arbitrarily, or?
You mean a matrix which is 0,
yeah,
0?
Yeah, like,
thanks, Mark.
Eventually, they represent the probability. How do you
right.
tell which particular element represents which probability?
Right, but in a sense that's just arbitrary, you just assign it. So you just,
yeah.
that's something we fix at the start. So we just...
So we didn't really show that the top one is 0%. We just show that one of them is 0%.
Right, no, but we did, because what we did is we defined whatever the probability of the top one to be 0%. So in a sense, what we're doing is... Really, I mean, what we're doing is here is, so but that's, we have to do that. There's no other way. Because really what we're doing is we've got, so this is, I mean, this is a common thing in physics. So we have on the one hand, the real world. And, mathematics. And so few mathematicians just stay in the world of mathematics. So they're very boring people, and it's very good. But physicists, what we do is we, especially theoretical physicists, all physicists, basically try and spend part of their time here and part of the time here. And I guess it's also, it's not just mathematics, there's also, I guess, the concepts as well. Because, for example, in this question here, I mean, I don't see any equations, but that's still physics. That's, you know, there's some serious physics there, and that's a very conceptual question. So that's still, I mean, theoretical physics is not just mathematics. But what we're trying to do is get, really translate between the mathematics and the real world. So we get some sort of mathematics that represent what these real photons and these real half-silver mirrors and these real detectors are doing. And so to do that somewhere along the way, we're going to have to actually just sort of make some definitions or make some assumptions or say that just some assumed things. So just, I mean, really what we've said that we've just kind of, in a sense, arbitrarily said, look, so whatever element, if you have a matrix, column matrix, whatever that is, so that the square of the magnitude of that, that gives you the probability for finding the, so I think that's detector B, that gives you the probability for finding the particle in at detector B. And so we have to do that. There's no other way of doing it. So there's nothing wrong with that. It's just a definition. And so you've got to do that really because we're translating from one language to another. So you just have to say how the elements in your mathematics go over to the other.
So what I really don't understand is how you corresponded the 0, 1 or 1, 0 at the beginning
right.
with each of the detectors, right? Like which element is detector B?
You can just
right.
it as, you can just
we,
think it as arbitrary as the top one is the vertical component, the bottom one is the half.
Yeah, so I just said this is the way things are. I could have swapped it around and said
yeah.
the other way. I could have equally said this is detector B, this is detector B, this is detector A. All I'm doing is I'm just trying to set up some system where the mathematics works out. So, I mean, if you're looking for a sort of a proof of that, I can't give you a proof because it could have been either way. But the point is basically it works. So this is really what I'm doing is this is a scheme or a system or just some kind of technique we're doing that allows us to use this math to get the answers out. And so the point is this is a scheme and I'm telling you what the rules are. And you can use this, and what you can do is you can predict amazing, amazing things with amazing precision. And so this is all I'm telling you the rules. And theoretical physicists made up the rules, and that's what they always do. They just make up the rules. But the point is, the rules work in good theories anyway. So, okay. Okay, so you're not totally convinced, but maybe we can talk about this later. But we could have, it's arbitrary in a sense. But we're making up the rules, but the point is the rules agree with experiment. So, okay, so this is what we have. This is another state. So that's kind of, we've kind of in a way seen that at least this matrix associated with that one there, the half Silverwood mirror, that, I mean, it works. It gives us the right probabilities for finding the results. So I should say this is kind of abstract and pretty much the universal feeling that people have. I mean, I remember when I was learning quantum physics in second year, and we learned it a different way, but we did all this mathematics, we solved all these equations and stuff. And at the end of it, I remember talking to someone, and you know, they got a good mark on the exam, they could solve the equations and the symbol psi and so forth. And I said, what did we just do? I just didn't really understand it. Like what does it really mean? What's really, really happening there? I was kind of solving the equations. And I think that's kind of a common thing. It's not really obvious what is kind of really going on. And it's not like we really don't know fundamentally what's going on in the quantum world. But we have this, in a sense, it's sort of machine or an algorithm, if you like, for finding the answers, for predicting whether what the probabilities are, in this case, of finding where the photon will be. So, to a large degree, this is what quantum mechanics is. Okay, so a matrix makes sense. So, let's add a little bit of a complication. So, okay, let's move on one step. Right, and so let's get just a piece of glass or some other semi-opaque material, and let's just add it there and put it in one of the parts of the interferometer. So, of this setup. So this is what we'll do. Just put that in there. And that actually changes the experiment slightly. Not much, but slightly, as we'll see. So what it does is gives it an extra, if you like, we use the term a phase, or it's an extra sort of amount to the photon as it's going along. Okay, so that part there, so the photon is going in the 0-1 path, it's going up there and along. So what it actually does is mathematically, so physically, it just gives it, if you think of the photon, so a photon has a wavelength and it has a frequency. And different photons of different frequencies have different colors. So what we do is, so what we're actually doing is adding a phase. So this is just actually analogous if we had a ripple tank and we had so we had this wave going on the ripple tank here, and we had kind of a part where the floor of the ripple tank was raised, so it was shallower water. What happens there, that affects how the wave propagates, and you can get extra phases built up. So the wavelength will change, and you can actually get kind of a different phase, so the wavelength changes. This is exactly what's happening. And mathematically, the way we represent that so actually, I should put kind of a diagram that flows on would be kind of a wave coming up like this, and then where, so it's kind of weird. So a photon has a wavy aspect to it, so it has a wavelength, so it must have a wave-like aspect. You want to kind of get an intuitive picture of the photon going towards a glass in air. It kind of moves along like this, and then it kind of bunches up in here. So it actually basically sort of shorter wavelength, greater frequency. So it's actually the period, in a sense. It's basically, well, not the period, but it's really kind of more quickly going up and down. So actually develop a greater phase. So what happens mathematically, if you want to represent that, is we just have the state going from here to that value, phi, where phi is the phase we build up. So we're just multiplying it by e to the I phi. And so, yes?
What is a phase?
A phase, okay. Good question. So you know what it is. So a phase is, so if we think of, running out of black bullets. So if we think of sine theta, so if we draw a graph of, Okay, yeah. So if we're happy with sine, happy with sine? Okay, so draw a graph of y equals sine theta. What it does, it goes along like here, and obviously we've got... pi, 2 pi. And so what the phase is... is that. So in a sense, that just tells us kind of how far along the cycle we are. So it's just a really, yeah, how far along the cycle we are. When we're here, we're kind of... all the way along the cycle, halfway along, three quarters, one quarter, and just this is kind of the measure of how far we are along the cycle. So the greater the phase, the further along the cycle. But obviously, in essence, it really sort of repeats itself after a while. So normally you don't only deal with phases up to 2 pi, because after 2 pi it just starts repeating itself. Yes?
So it's kind of like a phase shift. You say sine, yep, putting brackets, theta plus... something.
Exactly. Yeah. That's, yep. Exactly. So plus whatever. So actually plus phi. Put in. Yeah. So exactly. Yeah. Good. Yes, David.
Is like experiments like this require an extremely precise information of the mirrors and everything?
Yeah. That's, yeah, good point. So these experiments. So I'm kind of saying, oh, they're simple, but these experiments require. Basically, you get precision down to the order of roughly one wavelength of light. Basically, you move the optical elements, the mirrors, within that precision. So basically, we're talking about roughly 10 to the minus 7 meters, a tenth. So you'll actually see these experiments in a lab at University of Waterloo, and they're very complicated. And a similar experiment to this, but a little bit more complicated, no, not quite Marcus and Morley, but something similar to this. Really, it's basically this, but where they, instead of just shooting one photon in, they shoot two photons in. So, okay, use the big eraser. Ah. Okay. So. Just an experiment like this, just two photons, half silvered mirror, put that in. I know some people that do the experiments, and a couple of years ago I was talking to them, and they said that typically it takes people about 6 months to get that working. So there's some more details in there, because you've got to actually produce the photons, but to actually do that sort of experiment around about 6 months, so it's really, really precise. Yes. So I might take one more question. Yep.
Why didn't he do any transformation for reflections from the 100% mirror?
Right, yeah, so I'm being a bit sneaky. So, yeah, you're absolutely correct. We do, and we should, but I've left them out because they kind of cancel each other out because both of them have them. So it's kind of like everyone has something, then no one has it. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like, in a sense, that you have potential. You could say I'm at zero gravitational potential now, or I'm at, because, you know, or you could define it to be, well, we're two stories above or four stories above, so you could find me down the ground. So kind of this sort of constant difference doesn't make any difference. You can change it. So really, technically, I should add them in. So I should add lots of e to the I pi of 2, but it's kind of like everyone's got them, so they cancel each other out. So, but good point. Okay, moving on. So, okay, so this is the phase change, and basically phi is related to... Do you get the question?
Yeah, why is it e to the I pi?
Oh, right.
Why is it that?
Yeah, so probably the... Yeah, so it's not kind of obvious. So, oh, actually, yeah, if we draw one of the imaginary real diagrams, so of the number... Then if we have a number 1 here, so 1 is there, so we start out with 1, and if we plot the number e to the I phi on this, then what it is, it has length 1, but it's actually rotated around by an angle of phi. So what that transformation really does is just rotates it around by phi, and that makes sense because I said a phase is an angle. So
part of it becomes an angle.
Exactly. Yep. Exactly. Good point. Yep. So, okay, and then the thicker the glass, the greater value of phi is. So that's what we have. So how does this affect how the probabilities change? So we have the initial state, which is the photon going in. And really, so this represents the photon going in before it's gotten to the half-sifted mirror. And then after the half-sifted mirror, when it's kind of in two paths at the same time, what we do is we just use, oops, actually that should be a 1 over root 2 there. What we do use is use the beam splitter, or the half-sifted mirror transformation. We use this matrix here. And you know what that does, it changes it to this, and you know that's the value there, the 1 over root 2s. Okay, so then what it does is gets up to here, and so the photon is in some sense here and there, and it gets through to the glass, this phase shifter, as it's sometimes called. And what happens is we add this little kind of a phase on there. So it changes from that to that. So I guess really what we need to do is just have whatever's in that element there, so, and just multiply that by e to the I phi. So that's how we implement the phase shift, because it's only related to this path. So we have the one there, so we just multiply that by e to the I phi. So So the way we can think about it is, okay, so this is a photon, so this is the state here. But that's just equal to the photon taking definitely the lower path plus definitely the upper path. And so the beam splitter, it's only in this upper path here. So it's only going to affect this component. And what we saw before is we had the 1, and we just multiplied that by e to the I phi. If you multiply 1 by e to the I phi, you get e to the I phi. So to figure out how the photon affects this state, all we need to do is multiply this state by, as we did before. And 0 multiplied by e to the I phi, 0. 1 multiplied by, or I over 2, root 2 multiplied by e to the I phi gives us, well, e to the I phi multiplied by I divided by root 2. And so that gives us that's how we get the state. Okay. So this is how we actually get that state. This is why we insert the e to the I phi there. And then, I'm sure you'll guess the answer to this, but what we do is we have the half-sifted mirror, and we implement the transformation. And so what that does is, basically it's the same thing, so the same matrix, except we've just got to pre-multiply this column vector by this matrix, and you can verify that this is the result you get. Turns out that that is what you get. So it's a little bit more complicated, but that's actually the answer we get. So that's the result. And you can verify that yourself. Okay, so what I'd like you to do now, before we go to the break, is, so this is the result we get. So what I'd like you to tell me when the phase shift is pi, so we have a phase shift of pi, what are the probabilities of finding the photon at detectors A and B? So we've slightly changed the experiment, and what we've done is we've just added this little piece of glass, and we'll see that kind of changes the probabilities. It changes the way the photons constructively and destructively interfere with each other. And what we'll see is just what that happens. And we'll see a very, very interesting thing. So if you could write your answers down, would you be working on paper and write, actually, forget about the whiteboard. So if you could get the answer 1. And then if you get 1, work on 2 and 3. But what we'll see, we're just about to get to the end of this. And what we'll see when we get to the end of this, the payoff will be big. Because we'll actually done, just in this simple experiment, you can see really essentially all the core features of quantum physics. And we'll actually see how they turn out. And won't just be able to see and tell them to you in a hand-wavy way. I'll actually be able to show them to you and point them out in the mathematics exactly where they are. So this is why it makes them kind of laborious when we're going through these matrices and everything. But this is exactly why. So this is essentially one of contains the essence of quantum physics in this experiment. So you got the first one? Yep, that's right. John.
If your glass is not equal to a factor and you say it's not equal,
yep.
Will you get the same effect if you want to look like that?
No, it'll actually be, what you get is some probability, you get somewhere between 100 and 0 and 0. It could be 75, 25, depending on what it is. It could be basically anything. So, continuous and varying. Sorry? Using that, because that's, cause this is the final. Does anyone, does anyone not understand the question? Does anyone need any help? Okay. Yep. I'll. Yep. Sorry. That's the angle. That's the angle there, that what that does is that gives, so we can think of the photon as being one. So really the way to think about it is
the photon.
So we started off with that.
Does everyone have their name tags and they're out, and we need that.
before lunch just to make sure everything's fine. Does anyone not have their name tag? Okay, so remember I need to bring it tomorrow.
I don't know where it is.
Okay, ask Sammy and Jamie for a new one. So if you need that, that's important. Okay, great. And also, Sonia has something about t-shirts. So I know you're thinking about them, so take it away.
Okay, so I've got a couple examples for you guys to see. First of all, there's the one I'm wearing. And I told you about this guy from yesterday. It's 50% single on the front, and on the back, we have the half silver mirror.
What is that thing?
It's got a whole detection system set up.
Okay.
And a trigger to get the other's head.